Schubert's music is closely connected to the idea of the 19th century musical salon, written for the intimate setting of a bourgeoisie living room. But this fantasy is an exception. It's a full-fledged concert showpiece that Schubert experimented with as a young composer. It gets its name from a song he had written earlier with the title The Wanderer, and he reuses a theme from that as the basis for the slow second movement and writes a set of variations over it. And it goes like this. And the content of the lyrics is also carried over in the piano version with a character. It's about this resigned reflection of a traveler who feels he doesn't belong where he is and searches for happiness elsewhere. But in the fantasy, it's just an interlude between three other movements that are very bright and frisk in major and allegro, so it's more a celebration of life with an episode of reflection in the middle. But the thematic material is very cohesive throughout the work, and the movements follow each other directly with carefully composed gradual transitions between them, so it's really one long piece of about 22 minutes of spectacular piano music. Let's get into it. So the thematic material of all movements is connected through the rhythm. In the slow second movement, we have this rhythm from the song. So it's a quarter note followed by two eighth notes. And it kind of has this feeling of walking to it, like a going continuous motion. Now he takes this rhythm, but puts it in a tempo more than twice as fast in the first movement. But it's the same quarter note followed by two eighth notes, and we get this. It's kind of a good, confident running speed. Anyway, the motif here continues with some arpeggios and this chromatic inching upward to a half cadence, so C major, and then going to G7, which is the dominant seven, that's a half cadence, ending the phrase on the dominant, and then the answering phrase goes back from the dominant to the tonic. Back to C major. Now we get an answering phrase on a secondary phrase level, so some more energy. So it's a shorter statement, comes two times. And third time takeoff. Lovely harmonic progression here, the circle of fifth. So in the scale, and then like kind of choosing the stop to get off is the A minor with this E7, and then going to F major 7, and we get this dropping down to piano and tremolo and crescendo. Really exciting music. Back up to fortissimo. So a lot of these quick ramps of dynamic contrast in this music, very unusual for Schubert, or not that usual, it happens, but in this piece it's a lot. It's like Schubert as its most Beethovenian mood. This is another half cadence, but now it's pointing to somewhere else. This is a French sixth chord going to E, which is a dominant, and like it points to A minor. But Schubert doesn't go there. Instead, he restates the theme back in C major and in pianissimo. So the effect is a median. We go from E major to C major. It has the pivot note of an E, and it's a cool effect of feeling fresh as he drops down to pianissimo. lovely comment. It's a variation. A little bit of humor in there. Anyway, it's full restatement of the theme, the variation, and again, outburst in fortissimo. Like really quick changes in character. We grow into a second subject group, which is another kind of version of the theme. It's the same rhythm, so a little bit slower here, I think, is how you usually do it. So we get a lot of interaction here with the left hand, very well crafted with interesting entries. And also a typical Schubert sudden shift between major and minor with the next statement here. So E major. So this is the dominant. You expect E major back, but instead he just throws in the minor directly. This is E minor and the aching chromatic neighbor notes. And it's the context that makes it really lovely Schubert plays. In a way, it goes on for a while, then we get some nice tremolo starting soft. Yeah, so flipping back to C, we're in E major and we get this mediant relationship again. So that's the theme coming back. He throws it upside down to get the continuation with the downward arpeggio in the left hand instead. Lovely variation. And another detail I realized when I was learning and playing this, you can think about the pedaling. And you can hear different in the beginning if they either do like a more cleanly classical style. So release the pedal on the eighth notes. That's how I prefer it. But you can also hear more full romantic style pedaling. That's like a different choice. I do prefer the classical. But when we get here, it sounds like too timid with that kind of pedaling. Kind of a marching band that's not like fully covered all the instruments. So, but I realized that I could just play with pedal here. So have different types of pedaling, even though it's the same thing, because it's very different in the register of the piano. So what I do is I play with full pedal here. But not when the theme is down, when you have so much sound in the piano. That's a nice detail I discovered when I was playing. Anyway, we get a new kind of episode with lots more stuff happening. Outburst in fortissimo, theme in the left hand here. This is the version of the theme when we had it in E major. Like they come in slightly different versions and with the right hand. Really a storm brewing here. After a while, we get a longer lyrical section, which is like the middle part of the movement. And it's a new idea, a new theme. And this is really why we love Schubert. He can write these melodies that are simple, but perfectly balanced and beautiful, and they just seem so effortless. Two rounds of that, and then we get the final section of the movement, the theme comes back, and Fast and Furious 16th notes. Yeah, really hard. This is notoriously hard for the pianist, the writing, especially when we get to the end of it. And there's a fun anecdote. Schubert was playing this in his home with some friends, and he was performing the piece, and he actually got to the last movement, but then it just fell apart in his playing, and he rose up from the chair and shouted angrily, "Let the devil himself play this stuff." So it's not just us pianists, even the composers sometimes. But like, this is one of those places you could easily think you could miss out on, because it's not really possible to do in tempo with all the octaves that comes here. So you need to find some solution to it, either kind of drop down the tempo a bit, but I prefer to just reduce some of it, to skip some octaves and just play one note instead. You might think this is not allowed, but I don't care. So this allows me to keep the tempo and really push the energy, but without breaking my hand. Anyway, we get the transition here to the second movement. It's a long transition. And I also realized it feels a bit like a crossfade. He fades out the loud parts with the accents on the chords, and he kind of fades in the softer parts in between. So it's already present in the beginning, but you're so tuned to loud accents, so it's not that, it's really subsidiary role when you first have it. So I don't know if that made sense, but I'll show. Like, this is just passing the time in between. So he keeps these accents and now starts moving harmonically. It's interesting. Some new elements in the bass. And now these loud accents are gone, and we have just this rhythm left. Lovely move from G sharp 7 and then keeping the G sharp, but moving the bass. It's not exactly like that. And a ritardando at the end to prepare the tempo for the second movement. It's a written out ritardando in the note values as well. So finally we're prepared. Like, he's written this lovely transition to the second movement. G sharp 7 points to C sharp minor, which is where the second movement takes off. And I'll just read the first two verses from the Wanderer song here, so you get the psychological framework. From mountains high down to the shore, the valley streams, the sea does roar. I walk in silence, full of care. My sigh keeps pondering on the where. The sun here seems to me so cold, wilted the bloom and life here old. And what they talk is but hot air, I am a stranger everywhere. And after this we have kind of six variations and two extra dramatic bridges in between. And I'll go through them to show what ideas Schubert uses to make it fit together into this lovely movement. So first we get some nice 16th notes rolling, and we go immediately to E major. So a little bit more positive. And this motif is new here. It's not in the original theme, but it's also from the song. This just that motif. But anyway, it feels like a variation because it starts the same, and now then we get to minor here. Something new. Back to E major. After this, we get what feels like a new variation. Down here, we get C sharp minor again. But it's just the beginning of this bridge that grows to a dramatic flurry. Really nice, fateful trill in the low register. Very similar to what he also does in the big B flat major sonata, the last sonata. You have this menacing trill. Starts to move. And grow up. Also, I do it poco a poco animato, so reach a slightly faster tempo here. This is quite common to do. So here we get this dramatic element. With this interplay between the hands. Goes up and down like a wave, and this is like the body of the movement. We get four statements of the themes, but they're only half the length of the original theme, because it varies after just half of it. He throws in a new variation. And we start in C sharp major, which is the parallel major, another typical Schubert tool he uses, but then they flip between C sharp major and minor. So yeah, first one we get nice triplets. Then second one, we flip back to minor and we get triplets in repeated chords. Now it starts to get really hard, this movement too, because you have to have a lot of things in the left hand to differentiate the bass and move quickly to these lovely inner voices. Aching neighbor notes. Third variation, back to major, now increases the frequency of quick notes to 32nd notes. And for the fourth time, one step further, 64th notes in the right hand and lovely scales, even harder, of course. But the theme is in the middle part in the left hand. With the neighbor note. Anyway, after this, we get the second dramatic bridge where the hands play in unison for like three pages. Quick notes, dramatic outburst. A lot of harmonic modulation, always pointing somewhere. It's culminating in these dotted rhythms, march chords. And this is the final variation, and it's really a magical place. I get goosebumps here. because we go down to this really soft, dynamic character, and it's just a shimmering in the left hand. And tremolando. I think like maybe he just wanted to have this fifth line in the notes. You have already 64 notes, the 64th notes in the left hand, and then he just wanted one quicker note denomination. It's just a sound you create really close to the keys to get this. And then the melody comes. So it's just a diminished chord. Seven, G sharp seven, but this neighbor note really hints about the minor mode. Like you feel like this feels like C sharp minor, and then he just flips it to the major instead, which is this amazing effect. So that's the first time, and then he does it again, Schubert. Now the melody is a little bit higher, but it's the same chord. But not this, this is taking another direction, this is a B7, but still the same minor mode feeling chromatic neighbor note. And then major. Just final kind of echoes of the melody here. We're in E major and then kind of a plagal cadence, A minor to E major. And then melody just fades out, and then he takes this motive and basically uses it as the foundation for the third movement that starts here. Completely different key, it's in A flat major, and it's in triple time, so this scherzo feeling. So it cannot follow the same rhythm as we have in the other movements, but it follows the material from the first movement pretty closely, like the way it's put together in the structure. So you can say that it's the material, but in another rhythmic clothing here. So. So you have the same type of arpeggios upward, and then the chromatic inching to the dominant as a half cadence, and then the answering phrase going back. So it's really the same form as the first movement. Then it deviates for the middle part. But then we get the same tremolo and chromatic run. Except here it's the proper dominant E flat major. Back to the theme again. In pianissimo, it's also the same in the first movement. This movement is more in rondo form, though, than the first movement. Feels more like a sonata, even though it's very closely related, all the themes. But we get some new type of episodes here with these accented rhythms. Modulating. Nice way of modulating, more transition. To this another lovely Schubert theme. So this is what we call the second subject for the third movement. This is also related to the lyrical section of the first movement. If we just compare the melodies, not exactly the same, but so this one. So if we take the first three notes of that and the last note, this is what we have as the theme. So it's another key here, but it's the same contour is all I'm after. Not the same harmony, but and not the same intervals, but the same contour and stretched out, so one bar each. And this is just a repeat of the melody, but the left hand gets super busy, and I find this too hard to play this light and quick, like in a high tempo as I want. So I do a simplified version here that you can check out in my edition of this. It goes like this. Then some more transition passage. And so on, we get a statement of the theme again, like the rondo theme coming back, the same. And then we get the second subject, but now in A flat major, the home key. It's very short, like these pass by quite quickly. But then after this, it just ends it with a cadence. Now we get a longer middle section. It's a really nice break from all the intense music from basically the first movement, the second movement, and the scherzo. This is like the most relaxed section of the whole work. It's a really nice break to breathe. But the theme is again related to the second subject, if you call this the third subject or the middle section. It's the same contour, like even more closer to the first movement. Now. If it's the same key, that's E flat major, but it's here it's squeezed together, and yeah, turns into different direction like three times with different continuations, and toward the end of it we get a nice transition back to the theme for the final statement of the third movement. So let's look at this. It starts as a D flat, but this is like the D, B double flat. It's A major. It goes from A major to E flat 7. This is the old tritone substitute or tritone move, because there's something with the leading notes. Like if you would have an A7, you would have two shared notes with the E flat. This is a point of symmetry between notes. Here it's not an A7, it's just an A, so it's only the third, the D flat, that's the same pivot note in the chord. Anyway, the theme returns. Immediately breaks off to a new direction. And this is like a substantial coda or a mini development or a long transition to prepare the last movement, the finale. By the way, hand crossings help here a lot. Here. I was very hesitant to do them because I thought I could just need to practice, but they actually help a lot. Because the left hand is free to move. You just hold the pedal. You're gonna hold the pedal anyway because it's the same harmony. Nice harmonic modulations. So when you get to this place, another notorious place. Really hard to catch all this, but if you do the hand crossings, what I realized is that when I got to this place, the right hand was much less tired and I could hit the notes much easier because with the accuracy, because it wasn't tired from doing all the tense movements of doing the arpeggios by itself. Anyway, we get stuck on this A flat 7 chord, and the left hand needs to practice as well. Annoying. Approaching a perfect cadence, a G6-4 to a G, going to C major. And this kicks off the last movement. And here we get a statement of the theme, or like one version of it, a mutation, because we recognize the beginning, the first four bars. So we're back in four with the wanderer rhythm and the chromatic movement that we recognize from the first movement and the third movement. But then after four bars, he makes a new continuation instead. And here Schubert presents this theme in a fugue exposition. So he adds voices to play the same subject in slightly different positions, and then the previous voice continues with the counter subject, and they fit really well together. That's the basis of a fugue. And typically, as we see here with the counter subject, it plays rhythms on a complementary points where, like, the main subject has a long note, the counter subject plays quicker notes, and vice versa. So it fits well together. Let's have the whole exposition. Then he kind of goes back to more orchestral writing. He abandons this fugue after the exposition. He doesn't fulfill a full fugue like J.S. Bach would. So it's a bit similar to Liszt's big sonata in B minor. It's a similar type of fugue exposition as the first part of the finale in that work, but then grows into more orchestral writing. So it just throws arpeggios up and down the piano instead. This is like, it's tough to play the fugue in because it's octaves all the time. And here it gets a little bit easier, so it's always nice. Anyway, after a while, we get some lovely sequences. This is hard for the left hand again, but I'm just gonna play the harmonies. It's so fun. It resonates with a much more modern way with these sus chords. And here is another fun moment after this. It's like he realized, oh right, I was writing a serious fugue. I need to get back to that. Let's throw in some sequence. Ah, what the hell? It's too boring. Let's do the fun stuff instead. So this we recognize again from the first movement, this tremolo and the chromatic run. So that's normally a half cadence in the beginning of the first movement. You end there with a break, but here we get an immediate closure to it. So satisfying. So it's approaching the dominant and we get the a cadence, the dominant going to the tonic. So satisfying. This kicks off a theme in the left hand again. And the right hand plays a more orchestrated version, a filled out version of the counter subject. It's getting tough to play this here too. But it's a lot of energetic music, lovely, if you can just get it right, a lot of practice. There's some more, a lot of sequences, you get this movement that's the end of, the end of the subject. It just puts that in a sequence four times, so. And now going from G to A. To D, so pointing to G, and it's not done here, it does one more, and finally get the circle of fifth sequence. It's a lovely place. And then these just Rossini progressions, you know. Really always like at the end of this classical opera, arias, Rossini and Mozart too, you hear them really signaling it's approaching the end, this 4-5-1 progression, basically. Or maybe it's a 2 in first inversion. And 6-4. Dominant 6-4 resolving. It's a specific profile of that cadence. Some more sequences, and I jump to the final page. We finally approach like the proper cadence. You would think it would end. But then he goes down, and basically it feels like it never ends, this movement. So it gets elaborated on C major. A Beethoven symphony, this pounding, perfect cadence. But it's not done yet. We do have a lot of arpeggios over C major. Something like that. Finally, it's a lot of fireworks. It ultimately finds the end point of it, and it feels very much like you're coming home to a big party after a long journey of traveling. Thanks for watching Sonata Secrets. The Patreon shoutout goes to M. Thurston.